It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along on this second day of Snapper Season 2020. It's not that bad this day, but we will. Hey, Mike. Mike with the sound effects. I don't even need the sound effects department. I got Mike to do that. You good?
I'm good now. Yeah.
Okay, you good?
I feel a lot better.
Yeah. Listen, this is part of the discussion as well. I'll go ahead and tell y'all right now that because we're attempting to snapper fish or maybe going to catch bait or doing something like that, this is a show previously recorded in the week because as snapper season has started. Also, we were in a great situation with Dr. Sean Powers and Colonel Scott Bannon in studio. They were on Midday Mobile with us, and we held them over here to do a special update here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along, and here we go. The question of snapper and snapper season. Mike wants to know why he can't catch 25-pound snapper 5 miles off the beach. Is that your first question?
No, but that's a good question.
Hey, Director of Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, often a guest with us, but I think this is a first for having Dr. Sean Powers on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Thanks for being here. I just lean into that microphone and tell folks, what do you do for a job?
So I get to fish a lot for my job. It's not necessarily always the fishing that people would think of. We use a lot of standard fishing gear, big bottom long lines, big 10-hook rigs. We also do a lot of remotely operated vehicles with cameras. So essentially, when I'm not in the office writing grants or answering to my administration at the university, we're offshore measuring the fish population. The state of Alabama and the university got together about 10 or 12 years ago and said, you know, these very complicated models that the federal government uses have two problems. One, they don't seem to be right a lot.
There's that, yeah.
And they're very difficult for the public to understand. Isn't there a simpler, more direct way to do it? And we said, absolutely, we can just go out there and measure the fish. We have the technology. Technology has developed with underwater cameras, hydroacoustics, kind of like on your bottom fish finder. And we can directly count these fish. And so we can base our estimate of what's off Alabama by directly counting those fish. So myself in a group of graduate students and wonderful technicians spend the year looking at the reef fish community offshore. We do some work inshore, but most of our work is offshore in the artificial reef network. So we get a good idea of not what fishermen catch, but what's really out there. What's the average size? And you brought up, you know, why don't we see 25-pound red snapper 5 miles from the shore? And the answer is we do. Occasionally we do see those. But those fish naturally want to move to deeper water, so you wouldn't necessarily expect to find them there.
Just a side note, Dr. Powers, that's interesting. So it's not just my idea has been, of course, Mike and I are joking with each other, but it's this idea that there would be more fishing pressure, more chance to have that fish caught and not be on that close reef at 9 miles or 10 miles or whatever. But in fact, also working with that is a natural migration for the bigger fish to go further offshore?
Correct.
Very interesting.
As they age, they'll move further offshore into deeper water. The second thing they'll do is they'll just move away from the structure. You know, the snapper will stay close to the structure for their first 8 or 10 years of life. They live to about 56 or can live to about 56.
It's wild.
As they get older and bigger, they're less worried about a shark eating them. They don't need that structure anymore. So the fish might still be there. It just might be in a spot that's just hard to fish, because who wants to go to a mud bottom and fish for, you know, 6 hours to catch one fish.
Right, right.
They want to go to the reef where the fish are more concentrated.
Where your bottom machine lights up with, you know, fish.
Yeah, so that shows you the importance that, that both things have a hand in it. It's important for the state and us to see what the fishermen are catching, but it's also important for us to know what's out there independent of what the fishermen are catching. And that's why we call these fisheries independent surveys. And that's why the state is invested in funding them, because, you know, not everything will show up in somebody's catch.
Right. And question here on the survey, do you run the same transects? And I'm thinking about this from a waterfowl side, right? So we'll think about right now, end of May pond count, right? So they fly these transects on the sex on the prairies, and they're not as much saying as here's the totality of ducks that are on the prairies. They're saying in this grid, each year we fly this same grid, and the population is increasing, stable, or decreasing based on that grid. Is that what y'all did? You go to the same places, or do you move around?
It's very similar. The statistical sampling design is very similar to any wildlife or fisheries. But what we do is we have the whole Alabama coast gridded in 2 kilometer by 2 kilometer bit, 1 nautical mile by 1 nautical mile. Bends, and then we randomly choose about 80 of those a year, and then we'll go out with side scan, map the whole bottom, so we know how many artificial reefs are there, how many natural features are there, and have numbers on all of these, because as you know, a lot, 80% of the reefs off Alabama are private. People have put it there, and they
ain't
don't
nothing private no more, Sean.
Theoretically, unpublished, I guess. Is the safe word. So we will then we'll randomly choose some structures within that grid. We'll do our fish counts by the underwater video. We'll fish them with some standard gear. We'll also fish a big bottom long line that tells us where the big snapper and sharks are. So really that whole ecosystem, including the snapper, are estimated in that grid. We do enough of those grids to get a really small confidence interval, a real tight confidence interval, so we have a really good number. And we do that every year, so for the last 12 years.
So you're looking for trends, right? I mean, you're looking for trends. We did this last year, and this is the information this year. This is the information. Compare one year to the other to the other.
So one of the things we can do is look at trends. The real novelty and where South Alabama has really set itself apart from other fisheries programs is not only do we look at trends, we now can calculate the absolute abundance in that whole area. So we know, for example, the last estimate we gave Scott was there 7.2 million red snapper off the coast of Alabama.
Now, that's crazy.
Or about 21 million pounds of red snapper. So we can express
so average 3 pound, you're saying?
Yes, okay. Yes, because most of the fish are small.
Right.
And the fishermen wouldn't even encounter a lot of those. But we can give those numbers. Same thing. You know, we were worried about lionfish for a long time. We saw that population rapidly come up in 2016, and now it's rapidly declining, and we had a couple hundred thousand lionfish out there, and now we're down to less than 10,000.
And why?
That's an amazing stat.
Why? I know grouper are eating them. I mean,
some grouper eat them, and some sharks may eat them. The only documented proof of grouper eating them is when a diver really passes it in front of its its nose. They probably don't naturally prey on lionfish. There's a couple of theories. One, there's evidence that there's a disease affecting lionfish. This is work that's been done in Florida. The other thing we think is that they exploded and they just couldn't compete with red snapper. Because we also see a lot of small red snapper, gray snapper, a whole lot of other smaller snappers are kind of coming into more of a higher abundance, presumably because the larger red snapper are getting fished down a little more. And I think it's just that the lionfish just couldn't compete as much as we feared. I think there'll always be a few there, but, you know, the population might explode again for lionfish.
Might boom and bust, boom and bust.
Yeah, but that's the great thing with the data sets that the state funds us to collect is we can track those things. So where it's most useful right now is estimating the absolute abundance of all of the snapper and the reef fish that we want to harvest and set management strategies. But it also gives us incredible information on lionfish, invasive species, sharks, you name it. You know, I would say that Alabama has probably the single best fisheries ecosystem science program in the nation right now.
This is great to know. Mike, you got, yeah.
Because
I got two questions.
At least I don't have them on record. Can I board side scan?
Yeah. I've got my first one is a down and dirty fisherman question that you would expect out of the likes of Mike and I. The second one is nerdy science talk. So the down and dirty one, out of your surveys and doing these grids, what kind of wrecks are best for red snapper? I mean, what kind of, is it pyramids? Is it this? I mean, is that knowledge that
That's
y'all
a great
take
question.
From it? Which ones do best?
So right now, for red snapper, chicken coops or chicken transport devices, as Scott's staff likes us to call those,
yes,
are ideal. They hold, without a doubt, the most red snapper and gray trigger fish. I mean, probably 2 to 3 times what a pyramid would do. Now, a chicken coop, though, because of our size scan,
transport device, Dr. Powers.
Yes, exactly. Last about 7 or 8 years is what we think because they rust away. A pyramid will last at least 25 years.
So you're balancing out which one's better for long-term versus short-term.
Correct. But the other thing, too, that are just amazing are these super pyramids that the state has put out. And those numbers are published. You can catch tons of snapper, amberjack, triggerfish. I mean,
but there is
a
design.
Scott can tell you how much more those super pyramids cost, but they cost a lot more. So those are about 25 feet high with a rebar structure on top of those.
And those are the ones that are easier to find, too, on your bottom machine. We're coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. We'll talk to Director Bannon about that. And I've got that nerd question here. Mike, yeah, Mike expects it out of me. That's all coming up. We'll be right back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along. Also in studio as we're talking snapper, great to have Dr. Sean Powers, Chair of the Marine Sciences Department at USA and Senior Marine Scientist, Dolphin Island Sea Lab, and Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Colonel Scott Bannon with us as well. So I said when we came back, we talked about, so Dr. Powers mentions super pyramids. Wasn't that a game show when we were all kids, I think? Super pyramid.
Yeah, but $25,000 pyramid.
That's right. That was
which they share some similarities, I think.
So what is a standard pyramid and a super pyramid? Like, where do you define size?
Well, so really it's based on the product that's available from the vendors.
Okay.
And so they actually kind of manage the design a little bit with some input from us. So it's almost like buying an off-the-shelf product, but there's been some changes made because of some concerns for things like sea turtles and things like that. So we've provided some input for that. But the vendors here in Alabama have created a fantastic market for these artificial reefs that they create using certain types of stone, certain types of concrete that they feel and that we've kind of seen produce habitat much faster. So it's their product, and we're just going to them to buy it. And so a super pyramid, as Dr. Powers mentioned, it has this the amberjack pole at the top, so that makes it 25 feet tall. They seem to love that. We see it on the ROV. They swim around there. And then the diversity of the species that show up on those is much greater, even though those chicken transport devices, which is a mouthful, has a great abundance of red snapper, and those are a lot less expensive, very easy for the public to buy those and deploy those. It's much more cost effective for them. For us, it's about some long-term investment in this reef system. We've worked with the University of South Alabama to determine how many reefs do we need to replace in a year. So right now, our generic number is we need to be putting out between us and private citizens somewhere in the 300 range.
Wow, that's just to maintain?
Just to maintain and potentially grow a little. This year, we've put out 1,200. We've seen an increase in private reef deployment, which is good, sign of
that
a good economy.
That was going to be my question.
And a sign of a good economy. And so there's several hundred of those a year that go out. So right now we're on a very good track. The challenge is, Dr. Powers mentioned it, is that the placement. You need to place those appropriately to get the best bang for the buck. So we have some.
But so they don't get covered up or they don't get moved?
So that you're not, you know, if you put them too close together, well, then you lost the value of that reef. So we have some complexes, as we like to call them. There's a series of two or three smaller ones, or maybe two big ones, or one big one and two small ones. And so we're playing with some of those ideas. But then there's a separation between those.
That's what I was wondering. Is there a sweet spot to where the next complex or individual should go?
We have a feeling that there is. And I believe it's 500 meters. Is that about what we're looking at right now? So that way, we're spending your money wisely and providing you the best benefit of that. It's just not this, hey, ride around and shove them overboard. That's not what we do. And then we publish it, and we send it back to you. Yep. So these are your reefs.
I want to get into, speaking of our reefs, and Dr. Powers, you and Mike were having a discussion during the news break there. I think it's important. The reason why, because, I mean, we can just say that chicken transport device mechanisms are better, you know, year by year, maybe not longevity. Why?
So I think it's because it's similar to a shark cage that you put divers down in. The diver is happy, content. They may want to eat a sandwich or just look around.
Right.
Because they know the bigger predators can't come in. And some of the pyramids give a fair amount of protection as well. But I also think it's just the amount of complexity. It's all of that metal material that is surface areas for little invertebrates, little shrimp, little crabs, and it's just a function of it feels like there's more protection for the fish, and then there's just so much more surface area that the prey can be attracted to. So I think those are the two things. Like Scott said, one of the things that we're looking at is, you know, what's the cost effectiveness? Even if we had to replace chicken coops every 7-8 years, does that eventually add up to a reef pyramid that we think has longer longevity?
Right.
So, and those are things that we can address now because we have this large monitoring program. And the other thing we talked about ideal spacing for fish, but what's the ideal spacing for fishermen? I mean, I know fishermen get very frustrated when they show up and that someone's on their secret spot and someone's
on
that number.
There's seven somebody's on their secret
spot. And then there's another one. And what we found with mapping and the area is that there is surprisingly a lot of reefs really close to shore. Basically, once you hit the reef permit zone, there's a lot of reefs right there.
We don't like to talk about those. Keep them quiet.
But what we would like to see is for more and more reefs placed by the public out further and further so we can spread that effort. And again, not only from a fish perspective, but just from, you know, an enjoyability or reduced user conflict, as we like to say, in our business. So we're able to look at a lot more of the spatial management. And so that's what we're doing with the state. Right now, the state does not dictate where a reef is placed if a private individual puts it out there. They obviously have total control over where they put their reefs.
Okay.
And so that's what we're talking about is
but you
got to really
fight
doing
some human nature there. There's got to be an incentive or something because human gas prices, time of the day, whatever. I mean, you always want to get the closest reef you can catch some good fish on and come home, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So that's it. You know, you got to, even though maybe this idea that the fish, and like you said earlier, those bigger fish are migrating offshore. If you want that big fish spot, you are there is some compulsion there to put it further out.
Yep, yep, exactly.
All right, so I get to ask my nerd question here before we get back into it. So
yep,
thinking
time
about reefs and all this, and you and I had talked on Midday Mobile earlier in the week about kind of the biomass around a reef. Are we looking, if for some reason, and I don't want this to happen, but if we left reefs alone, okay, weren't fishing them, doing any kind of angling on them, left them alone for, I don't know, is it 2 years, is it 5 years, would the ratio of red snapper to mangrove snapper to trigger fish to beeliners to lane snapper, would that change? Is there any way to model that, you know, what a reef looks like and the kind of the constitution of the different species on there while it's being fished, would it look the same if it was just like a museum piece?
So we've been able to do those calculations through some cool experiments. We could figure out if reefs have heavy fishing pressure or light or no fishing pressure by putting an acoustic receiver, a listening device, down okay. there. Because you can hear the props on a boat. You can also tell if it's a single engine or double engine. So you can actually figure out how hard a reef is fished. And in general, you get larger red snapper on those reefs that aren't fished as hard.
Okay.
But you tend to lose the gray snapper, the lane snapper, the okay. vermilion snapper, when there are too many large red snapper there. So, you know.
So without pressure, the zero pressure one, the no fishing pressure one, it ends up becoming dominated by just very big red snapper and
correct.
A lot fewer of the other species.
Correct. In general.
Okay. Yeah. Everything. Yeah. I'm just, I know I'm talking to a scientist. He's going to say, well, not on every occasion. But
my colleagues will be calling me and saying, that's not always happening. I have one reef off Perdido. That, yeah.
Listen, y'all, this is Hayseed Sean Sullivan explanation that I need. So then you go to a reef that's fished lightly, but still fished. You see a change there. And then take us to the heavily fished reef.
So the heavily fished reefs generally have, smaller red snapper, still some legal size because they'll redistribute themselves a little bit, but it'll generally have a lot more gray snapper, a lot more vermilion snapper, Tom Tate, ruby lips.
Okay, yeah. Thank you for the translation. Yes.
So it will be a different community structure. You know, triggerfish is the one that we still haven't figured out, because triggerfish don't seem to care if red snapper are around or not.
Yeah.
So not all species will respond the same.
So this idea that we have a lot of times when we're like, man, we're getting murdered by triggerfish on the spot, the snapper must be all off it. That's not necessarily true.
Correct. That's not necessarily true. Triggerfish generally co-occur with snapper. Now, you know, snapper and triggerfish are both incredibly aggressive for the hooks, where things like gray snapper are not very aggressive.
Okay,
for
that's
hooks.
A whole other part. Okay, so it's not just the abundance of them or whatever. It's their, because I've always kind of projected this in my mind, but I didn't know there was science to back it up. So a gray or a mangrove snapper is not size for size. Both of them are a pound or whatever mm-hmm. we're going to do. That red snapper is inherently more aggressive than the gray?
Correct. Some people say aggressive. I say stupid, but yeah.
tomato.
Red snapper will bite just about on anything and be the first ones to grab it. You know, gray snapper are very, very leery.
No joke.
and it makes it more difficult. And triggerfish are kind of in between. Triggerfish, because of their mouth, it's just
they're harder to hook. Yeah.
So and that's why. A lot of what we interpret the fishermen seeing is based on the hook gear. That's why these underwater videos and the remotely operated cameras that we use in our survey are so important, because they tell us absence of what we call selectivity of the fishermen and the gear, what's really out there. Because we've also been out there numerous times. I think Scott was on a recent survey trip with us where we caught nothing. The pyramid lit up, according to the boat stuff.
I've had
absolutely nothing.
Dr. Perry doesn't. You don't realize what you just said, because every snapper fisherman out there just went, okay, now let's.
And when
does
we
this
drop
happen?
The video,
is it a real thing?
Oh, when we dropped the video, there were tons.
Okay.
Literally tons. But what we notice is when we first pull up to the spot, the fish were a cloud around the structure. And then all of a sudden, they were tight to that structure.
Predators and or?
Dolphins or sharks, yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Usually it's dolphins or sharks mainly, I would think.
Because sharks sharks shut it down quick.
Because this can happen. I mean, how many times you go to the spot and it's lights up the machine. You can't catch a fish. You either come back later that day on the way in or you go like the next day. And you're like, okay, I don't think this place is good anymore, but let's try it one more time before we give up. And you have a great thing. Yeah, I mean, you just get bit the second you get there.
Yeah, I have.
So it's good to hear. This has been anecdotal my whole life, and now to have a scientist in here to talk about it, that it does. That's a thing.
No, and that's why you know the hook gear is important for us to use in our surveys because it tells us what the fishermen are likely to encounter. But the video gear and the other acoustic gear we use are just as important because it tells us what the population is doing. And both are important pieces for Scott to manage. And so we provide him the data both from what the hook gear and theoretically the fishermen are going to see. And then we provide him the video and the high-tech stuff that gives us an unbiased estimate of the population.
Yeah, and yeah, Scott, I want you to react to that.
So I just want to reiterate what he's saying, that we use a lot of science and a lot of techniques, and that is why Alabama's plan was the basis for the Great Red Snapper count, because it was the best plan in the Gulf of Mexico, and it went out and counted those fish, showed you what the fishermen were seeing, and then shows you what the science says is really out there. And that has changed the thinking across the Gulf of Mexico about how many red snapper that's specific to
that's
this
why
species.
That's why this comes back, the Great American Red Snapper Count comes back and says, there's a lot more than y'all thought before.
That's correct. And that's why, you know, Dr. Powers is now working on an amberjack study, because it's kind of the same thing. Let's look and see what's really there. Let's not just, you know, you kind of have the blinders on when you're just fishing for them.
Sure. And I mean, I think what y'all just talked about is going to resonate with a lot of people, because if we don't have an ROV, we don't have a camera down there, you can make an assumption, and Lord knows what mom and dad told you about assuming anything. It makes
I've made a career out
yes,
of that.
Yes, yes, but you assume that those fish aren't there because, well, they're red snapper. They always bite, but they don't always bite.
No.
And they can still be there.
No, and again, so now other states and other entities have created these camera programs, and the science has exploded in the fisheries world, and they're expanding their program at the University of South Alabama, and the technology is phenomenal. It's almost mind blowing to see that all of this occurs around a fishery. And so now the data that the states are providing, not the federal government, that the states are providing is phenomenal and should be.
And it can't be refuted,
science.
Right? Because it's based in science, not. I mean,
we can show you the video.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it's a great part of it.
No, and I'll add, I mean, the non-refuted part is not, unfortunately, where we need to be, but exactly what you said. They don't believe me. Here's my videos. Go count the fish.
Right.
I mean, yeah. And we might have counted wrong. I doubt it because we double-check and
right.
All those things. But there's something there as opposed to a very complicated numerical model that is just based on what the fishermen have landed.
Which we just is full of holes. Like a chicken coop or transport device.
The interesting thing about it, too, is, and you might have noticed this, is during some period in about August, early September, the fish snapper will stop biting.
And that's, yeah, what's happening there?
That's usually not because it's sharks or anything. That naturally, the water gets a little low in dissolved oxygen,
okay,
and a little higher in temperature. And we've noticed that if we don't catch a lot of red snapper and we see them, it's either, is there a shark around? Well, no. What's the dissolved oxygen? What's the temperature in the water?
So there's a relationship between DO and aggressiveness or stupidity or whatever.
Correct. And there's two schools of thought, too. They also, it's kind of the doldrums that we refer to it as, because it's also might be because the snapper are trying to do one or two last spawns, and that's where their concentrations are. So it's a combination of, you know, just the water quality is getting such where it doesn't support a real active time period for the snapper, or it's probably because a lot of them are trying to complete their spawning.
I just learned a whole bunch.
A lot.
Okay. So what that does is means you have to come back and see us soon here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Dr. Sean Powers, thank you. And you coming back soon?
Absolutely. We do a lot of work on inshore species, a lot of your
Yeah, we got to talk future show. We got to talk flounder as a conversation and all that.
That's a lot to talk about.
Let's plan on, very soon. All right? We'll do that. Coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Blake Leois, CCA, is going to join us there. Star Tournament getting cranked up. Think about this. If you've probably not the kind of tournament we're used to around here, longer form, we'll find out what it means when he joins us coming up in just minutes. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along on this snapper season opening Saturday. Well, I put you on the. I got you moved on mics. There you go.
We always have some great guests on here, don't we?
We do. We do. And it's, talking snapper. At the same time, this is a subject that came up. We were talking about during our special programming from the boat show, right? From the Mobile Boat Show. And we have our guests come by and we do that show from the boat show. And right. Our friend Blake Leois from CCA Alabama started talking about the Star Tournament. The Star Tournament, which is. Maybe somebody's like, I've heard of star tournaments before in other places. Well, we'll just get Blakely on to talk about it. Hey, man.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing great.
It's great. What is a star tournament? Like, if people have never heard this before, can you, talk about a star tournament versus what we're all used to?
Sure, yeah. So the star tournament, the star stands for Statewide Tournament and Anglers Radio. So that's what it is. That's not really important, so we can kind of set that to the side. But basically, the star tournaments were started over CCA Texas did the first one maybe 30 years ago, and what it is is a format where a X amount of redfish are tagged with special tags, and those are released before the tournament starts all across the state, and basically the participants sign up to fish the tournament. It runs the entire summer from today, so Saturday of Memorial Day weekend at 5 a.m. It opened up, and then it's going to close on the Monday afternoon of Labor Day on September 5th at 5 o'clock. And so that's the time frame to fish the tournament, and you can sign up any time throughout the summer. But I would definitely recommend doing that before you catch the fish, because if you do catch one of these tagged fish and you aren't registered, then you're going to miss out on a really nice prize package that we've worked on for a while now, and that's a Nautic Star 2022 Nautic Star 215 bay boat with a 150 Yamaha 4-stroke outboard motor.
Yeah, so I'd say that's good.
That'd be a real shame. That'd be a real shame to catch one of these fish and to not be able to say you're going to take the boat home.
So, I mean, some of the takeaways here. Number one, that, you don't – it's not like our regular tournament formats where you have to have a ticket before the tournament starts. You could get one today, tomorrow, whatever. But you got to have that ticket purchased, before you catch the tagged fish. So y'all tag these – so these are – I mean, these redfish that were caught here locally and tagged, or y'all raise you up some redfish and turn them loose? Can you give me any of those secrets?
No, it's no secret. These are all local fish that between myself and some of the guides and some other folks have caught over the last few weeks and have been tagged and dispersed around both counties. I really tried to not try. I did. We did do a good job of getting the fish spread out evenly, and I had some emails from folks wondering if all the fish are going to be in Orange Beach because that's where our office was or something. And I was like, no, it'd be easier if I could just put them all here in my back door. But no, they're spread out over both counties through Mobile Bay, and then we don't put them out, too close to the state lines, because you have to catch the fish inside Alabama waters. But those 30 redfish are Alabama redfish, and they're swimming around. And as far as we know, there's all 30 of them are still swimming.
So what determines the winner? The most tag fish you catch, the biggest tag fish you catch, or first?
The first redfish that's caught with a blue tag in it if that person's registered, then they're going to win the package. You know, as long as they haven't violated any of the, you know, the rules, or there's a problem with, you know, some shenanigans or something like that. If everything checks out, then there's one main prize, and that'll be their boat, motor, and trailer package.
So if somebody goes out June the 20th and catches that fish, it's over with?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If they're registered, and yep, it's over with for the main prize. Now if we have a main prize winner by the, you know, before July, then I'll probably put together a second or third prize, but it's not going to be something that nearly as nice as that you can hook up to a truck or something, but it'll be something you might be able to drag down the dock to your boat. You know, some coolers or some really nice rod and reel packages, stuff like that, to kind of give you a little bit more juice to keep fishing, if you will. But this is the first year we're doing it, and so we're easing into it. Your mind would be blown if you saw how many boat motors and trailers and trucks they give away over in Texas each year. It's quite impressive.
So all the tags are blue.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're just joining us, talking to Blakely Ellis with CCA Alabama, the Star Tournament that is on now through Labor Day. All right. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask him stuff. How many redfish y'all tag?
We tag 30 fish.
30. Okay, yeah. 30
yep.
fish
yep.
spread out between yep. Mobile and Baldwin counties.
Mm-hmm.
So they're out there. They got the blue tag in them. Okay, I'm writing notes and formulating here.
Yeah.
As that goes. Because it is, I mean, while I agree. I mean, I'm familiar with the idea because of Texas and Florida and all that, but this is a new thing here in Alabama. People got to get their mind. It's different than the other tournaments. It's kind of one you're fishing all the time. Even though you're fishing other tournaments, mm-hmm. you're kind of, until somebody catches one, you're always in the tournament every time you're fishing.
Exactly. Yeah. And then if we don't have a winner by the end of it, we're gonna give it away to one of the registered participants. And so the boat's gonna go home with somebody. So I have no incentive to try to sandbag and try to make the tournament drag on and not have to give the boat away. It's gonna go home with somebody one way or the other. So even if you're not fishing a lot, you still got a chance at the boat.
And what does it cost for a ticket?
So the tickets are $75, and that includes the tournament entry fee and the CCA membership, which is $35. So it's easier just to call it $75 to sign up.
So if I give you $75, I might have a chance at the end of the year, if nobody catches a tagged redfish, to win a boat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to say the L word because I don't want them in Montgomery to hear us talk about lotteries, but I mean, this is probably your best odds at
no.
winning.
No.
This is your but it's a tournament that has your best odds at winning a boat out of anything that I know. I mean, that's it's pretty good ROI.
There's definitely skill involved with catching
yeah.
redfish.
No, that's true. That's true. It is not a game of chance.
No, there's definitely skill involved.
I'm making Blakely nervous. Yeah. So
you can hold your horses there.
So sign up through the website, or where do we sign up?
Yeah, so our national website, joincca.org, is going to be the place to do that. And at the very top, there's a Star Tournament tab. Some of y'all might be getting emails from us with showing your membership number if you are or you used to be a member with CCA. And then you can also sign up through the Fishing Chaos app. If that's an app that you're familiar with already and have an account, you can sign up through the Fishing Chaos app as well.
So once again, that the prize here for the person who catches the first tagged redfish, mm-hmm. it's the boat, the motor, the trailer. I mean, this is mm-hmm. somebody is going to win this. Not a secondary chance. That person will then come claim this Nautic Star.
That's correct. Yep.
Mike,
pretty
looks
good
like
odds.
Looks like we're going to be red fishing a lot more this summer than we are going to be red snapper fishing.
Yep.
On that,
I guarantee you, it's cheaper.
Yeah,
come out better.
That's for sure. Hey, Blakely, before we wrap it up here too, on
sure.
a subject we talked about during the boat show. With tagging. Yeah. Speaking of tagging fish, this is not for the yeah. Star Tournament, but this is for us, uh-huh. you know, that want to take part in the research and the science of figuring out, you know, why the trout do what they do and where they go and what.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's didn't get a chance, are there more classes or any way to get into that program?
Yeah, so I don't have one scheduled right now, but I it's about that time now that we've finished some of our spring fundraisers, and it's kind of a little bit of a lull that we probably will be getting some scheduled. So best way for people to do is just reach out to us via email or on any of the social media sites and just say your name, where you live, and that you're interested in the tagging program, and we can kind of keep that list together and then put some of those seminars together sometime soon.
Perfect. Blakely, exciting news, and I think there'll be a lot of clicks going through that website right now as people get signed up. And
yep.
We'll want to talk about it when somebody wins, especially when it's Mike Ward. Okay, we'll want to get an interview with that person.
That'll be fun. I hope he's entered. That would be just a real shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Don't be the person that catches a tag fish without that star tournament ticket. Blakely, thank you. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right, coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have y'all here. Even though we're talking to you from your past, because we're out either, depending on what the weather did this morning, we're snapper fishing or we're catching bait.
We're doing something.
Yeah, doing something.
Getting ready.
That's for sure.
Yep.
I learned a lot today's show.
Absolutely. It was awesome.
I mean, just the discussion of when snapper don't bite.
Yeah. I've been there.
Listen, you go to that reef. I've been with Mike when it's happened.
But I used to have a spot that was unbelievable. Best spot I've ever had in my life. And you'd go there, and every time, just kill them every time. And then one time I went there, didn't get a bite. I said, oh, golly, I just fished it like 3, 4, 5 days earlier.
Right, right. You're assuming that like it's got
somebody came by and
caught them all, or
shrimp net came through,
right?
Got them, or you know, somebody went out and caught them all. And I said, man, I just disheartened. I mean, we fished it for an hour or so, you know, all
nothing.
Around it, not one fish, and wasn't showing up on the screen either. And I said, man, I'm just it killed me. So it was like I didn't even want to go back, you know.
Right,
and then
right.
Like a couple weeks later, I went back, and it was like. Nothing ever happened. They
just
were everywhere.
Them. Yeah.
Everywhere. I mean, just fast. I mean, they'd come up top of the water. You just stick a hook over in the water.
Yep.
I mean, literally a bare hook and jig it, and we'd catch them
so
that
they
way.
Were all there when you weren't catching them. Just some kind of predator had them pushed.
Undoubtedly. A shark or sharks came by and just ran them off the reef or something.
So we got to think about that. You know,
yes.
I mean, because I think we've all gone through that. We're like, I've been on the boat before and telling people, we crushed them here yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, like we did.
Yeah.
And now we can't buy a bite. And then you go a mile over to some other wreck and you catch
normal.
Them. Yeah.
Yeah. So just like Dr. Powell said, that undoubtedly it's porpoises maybe down there.
Porpoises,
or
sharks
or something that's making the snapper and everything get real close to the wreck or either way away from the wreck.
Right.
One or the other.
And the way away from the wreck thing, too, is just – I love – talking to Dr. Powers and talking to Scott Bannon and all these folks, because take things that we know as fishermen, but tell us why and confirm things. Like, you know, the up and out thing I always talk about when we're snapper fishing with people. They say, I want to catch a bigger one. I said, well, get off the wreck.
Get away from the spot.
Right? We get out away from it. We come up higher in the water column. The fish are usually bigger because they're not scared.
That's right.
And we've known that, but the ROV and the science and all that shows that, yes, that is what happens.
Yeah. And we all want to get right on top of the wreck, drop right on top of the wreck.
Yes, we do.
But if you only drop halfway down, you'll usually catch a bigger fish than going all the way down.
Up and out is,
Or as you drift off the wreck, then you'll catch a bigger snapper.
I mean, how many times that, you know, you drift off of it and, you know, I got to come out of the helm because I'm baiting lines or doing something and there's rods in the rod holders and they double over and that's the biggest snapper of the day.
That's right, because you've gotten away from the rig.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what happens to me all the time.
Yeah. So, I mean, so there's a lot of reasons they might not be biting right on the number, you know, when you're out there and catching the big ones. Anything, we've got about a minute and a half left here. Somebody's going to try to go tomorrow or something like that. Get out there.
You need to have a venting tool.
Yes.
That is something that is a law. If
yes.
they come to your boat and check your boat and they ask you, do you have a venting tool, and you don't.
That's a ticket.
Then you're going to get a ticket.
Yeah.
And everybody needs to remember this. If you catch a, you can catch triggerfish, amberjack, snapper this weekend, all the way through
Monday. I think it goes through Monday.
Yeah. So you have to report that
to in the snapper check, right?
In snapper check, you have to, whatever triggerfish you catch, snapper and amberjack, you have to report all of them. So don't forget that. A venting tube and report your fish.
And you got to have your reef fish permit. Make sure you've brought that. Even like Mike and I that have lifetime license and stuff, we still have to get that.
Doesn't matter. You have to have the reef permit.
So make sure to check all that out. Go out there. Have a good time. Be safe. PFDs, y'all.
Yep.
Be safe. All right, because we want to see you back here next week for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.